Great. Well, this is a real privilege to be able to share the unique story that I've given. And I don't know if you guys, you know, we all have our unique stories. And there's parts of mine that I like and that I'm proud of. And there's parts there where sometimes I wish it wasn't so unique and I wish I didn't have this part of my story. But I feel like the best that I can really do today is to share my story with you guys. And I'm going to warn you, I have kind of a crazy story. This is not a how-to manual. This is a known issue of mine that I'm kind of an extremist. So this is not, I'm not supposed to be an example to you guys. But what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to share three stories that have to do with me and money. And then we're going to talk about the gospel and how that fits into that. But I feel like if we start off with these three stories, the kind of thing that I've concluded is that if the gospel applies to me and kind of the crazy ways that I've lived, then maybe it applies to you. And when I say maybe, I mean that's what I believe. So a little bit about me. My family's back here, and I'm glad that they've come to support me. I have five kids back there, my wife. And I have kind of I got married when I was 20, and my goal very early on, I went to Bible college, and I decided very early on that I wanted to be a missionary. And I basically made fun of people like you guys, who slept in beds and had three pairs of shoes and spent more than $30 on jeans. And I wanted to be the poorest, live in the dirt, and die in some air-restricted, you know, no-fly zone. That was my goal, because that's what I thought would make God love me. So I went from that, and another part of my crazy story, and I'm going to get into more details in a little bit, but this is just a brief overview. Another part of my story was I was biking across the country with my wife and our one-year-old, and we got hit by a car. We were living off of $10 a day at the time, and that launched me into a career as a professional blackjack player. And I went on to lead a team of people that took millions of dollars from casinos, all legally. And remember, this is not a how-to, so this is very much not what you should do, but this is what I did. And this was a stark contrast. You gotta remember back to the first part of my story, where I was wanted to be a missionary without any money and live in the dirt, right? So there's been some transitions here. And one of the latter parts of my story was I was had the benefit of being a part of a startup here in Cincinnati. It's called Epifio. And this caught me completely off guard too. And at this time period of my life, this was a huge startup for me. I remember the first time that I made $10,000 or even $800 at night, and then I remember making, you know, thousands of dollars with blackjack, and I remember the first time I made $1 million in a year in the startup world. And this, you know, my question along the entire way was, where is God in all this? Because I was very comfortable in this little box that I was in, and as my life changed, it became more difficult to find my bearings, so to speak. So my guess is you guys are going to find yourselves being able to identify with certain parts of my story, and there's other parts you're going to be like, that guy is way crazier than me. And that's okay. So let's stick with the parts that you can identify with. Don't freak out. This is going to apply to everyone. First story for me, okay? And this is a hard story to share because I've never shared this publicly. But I'm from Seattle. And in Seattle, we have REI. You guys have REI here now, too. And REI is cool because they have this great return policy. So if you have trouble shopping like I do and you have incredible buyer's remorse, you don't even like spending money anyways, you have to justify every dollar that you spend, then having a return policy that's kind of like this ironclad return policy is great because it gives you this peace of mind. So this is my typical, I did a lot of outdoor stuff. I did mountaineering and rock climbing and biking all in Seattle, a little bit of running. And I would buy something at REI, and this is a typical way this would work for me, is I'd buy something, and then the next year, the new thing would come out. And instantly, I would feel like I had to have that new thing for a number of reasons. And it wasn't just to be cool. You know, that's not what this was about. A lot of these things were not actually, they weren't even external things, nothing you would see. But in my mind, this new thing was a more efficient, it was cheaper, it was a better use of my money. And I constantly struggled with this idea of, how do I not justify taking this thing back to get the newer, better, more efficient thing? And in a way, this entire time period for me, I share this story because efficiency had really become a god in my life. I don't know how you guys grew up, but for me, I saw these videos and heard about these orphans, or you know, you guys have the Compassion International thing we hear about here in Crossroads. And every dollar that I spent to me equated to some child in Africa that could have been fed if I would have spent my money better or more correctly or more efficiently or spent less of it. And this was such a way of life for me that I could not turn these voices off my head. I eventually returned so many things to REI that they asked me to stop being a customer there, which is pretty sad for someone that lives in Seattle, too. And there's a lot of stories like this in my life, you guys, and I would challenge you guys to think of those areas in your own life, because for me, I got married and I was so dedicated to not having stuff that I resisted registering for gifts at all. In fact, I remember someone bought us these two crystal toasting flutes, and they brought them to our wedding, and I felt so guilty about having these things that seemed so unnecessary that we tracked down the place to take them back to get credit, and we couldn't even use the credit. As a little child, I remember constantly ordering the cheapest thing on the menu. And no one told me to do this. You know, we were a middle-class family. We weren't, the money was okay. A $10 item was fine. But something inside me just, like, strove for this efficiency. And I realized that it never stopped. So I saw this using the REI example. As when I returned it once, it wasn't enough. I had to return it again, and the newer thing came out. Every year, the new thing came out, and there was always something cheaper to get. You know, I strove to spend $10 a day, and then it was $5 a day, and I always felt guilty for every dollar I spent. So that's one story. After that, I told you guys I became a professional blackjack player. That happened kind of on accident. I never set out to do that, but I read about the game, and I understood the mathematics of it to a point where I didn't believe it was gambling, and I still believe that by some definitions. It was risky, but we had a mathematical edge against the house. And I remember going to a casino for the first time. The casino was called Kenmore Lanes, and it's still a crappy bowling alley in Washington. It was, anytime you have a bowling alley and a casino in the same establishment with a bar, you know, you can imagine the high school students walking in there. And I sat down with this lady, and I watched this older lady lose $200. I couldn't believe what I just said. I was like, oh my gosh, she's lost 200 bucks. And I thought, 200 bucks, that's a lot of money, right? I mean, 200 bucks. And of course, my brain, I was thinking about how many orphans this could affect, you know? And I was doing the math, and I was really, you know, this is, you know, 40 orphans for 17 days or whatever. That was the way my brain was always working. And I left just completely tormented by seeing this lady just absolutely waste this money. And $200 can be a small amount for the amount of money that's wasted in a casino. So I grew up not going to casinos. This is my first time really being exposed to casinos, and I had been taught casinos, bars, maybe racetracks or certain movie theaters. You guys can get the picture. Those are areas where money is spent foolishly. And then there's areas where money is spent wisely. So I started asking myself this question about this lady, because I wasn't the type of person that was like, ah, screw it, it doesn't matter, God doesn't care. I was like, no, you know, this really matters, but I can't make sense of it. So I started asking this question, what would have happened? Would it have been better if this lady would have spent that $200 in a mall? Was that a better use of her money than the casino? It seemed like it, right? Maybe she could have at least walked out with something to show for it instead of just gambling it away. Or what if this lady would have spent $200 at the ski slope instead? You know, with some friends or going skiing. Would that have been better? And I started to realize it wasn't that I started to feel okay about casinos. But I started to realize that my sense of feeling okay about the rest of the world started to fall apart. Because I don't think casinos are good places. It's just so blatantly a waste of money, right? I mean, you see it and you're like, that is the epitome of foolishness. At least that's how I see it. But malls, those seem more responsible to me. And ski slopes seem like, oh, that's recreational and exercise and outdoors, so that must be a good use of money. But what I started to realize, the conclusion I came to, is that any amount of money spent being selfish is about as bad as it can get. It doesn't really matter where it is. You know, I don't think God, he doesn't see certain neon signs or certain doors are good or certain doors are bad or certain slope. You know, he's not shocked by the same things we are. That's what I started to realize. And while I started to casinos, it was really good for me in a way because it was so shocking to me. And I think I needed that shock. I needed to ask this question about how does God see money? And I started to realize the things that I used to, you know, at least I knew, oh, well, as long as I spend money here or here, these things are okay, right? Well, I started to wonder if I'm spending these things on selfish endeavors, are they any better than this lady that I saw lose $200 in a casino? The third story. So I went on to do this startup called Epifio. And it got me involved in this entrepreneurs club in Seattle. So these guys, these are millionaires. They're all millionaires. To be in this club, you have to be making $1 million a year. Your business has to be, or something like that. So they screen everyone. And I found myself in this hotel room with these guys in Canada. Okay, this is kind of like, you guys call them pods here. It's kind of that group. So I'm leading this group of rich millionaires in this hotel room. And these are guys, like some of the complaints, or not complaints, but difficulties I heard them struggling with. One of the guys was saying that he had multiple $17,000 bar tabs in 1 week, and he was wondering if he might be an alcoholic. That shows you some of the, these feel like very different issues in different people, right? So I sat here, and we went through this exercise, and we all listed every single job that we had on a piece of paper from day one. So if you mowed lawns, you wrote that on a piece of paper. And you proceeded to write any number for each job from plus 10 to minus 10. So I mowed lawns, and it was a plus 4, and I wrote one sentence as to why. And then I said, and then I delivered pizza, and it was a plus 7, and here's why. And then I got this job working construction, and it was a minus 8, and here's why. And then we all kind of had like 6 or 7 minutes to present our kind of job chart thing to the other people in the group. And these were guys that basically the bottom line of their story was they were more successful than they had ever been right then. Okay, they were at the top of their game. And I sat around and I heard these guys share their story, these were the guys that I wanted to be like. And they all kind of shared that the highest, each one of them said that the highest time in their entire career was that first moment that they got their driver's license, were delivering pizza, and were able to get free pizza and smoke pot. That was it. That was the highlight. And it was, now they were all kind of 3, 4, the stress, you don't understand the stress, this is crazy. It's now that I have 5 million, I see the guys that have 10 and 20 million, I want more. The peak of their game was when they were delivering pizza when they were 18 years old. And like I said, these were the guys that I wanted to be like. And they all didn't want to be themselves. So this is where, you guys, I realized this very important thing. And this can be said about the American dream. There's this quote that says, it's a game that has no end and it has no winner. So whatever number, this is what my experience has taught me, whatever number you think will make you happy will not. If these guys' experience or my experience has anything to say about this. Now, we could take that either way too, because I realize both sides of this. They played this video at a crossroads of this interview they did with me, and in there I shared that at one point in my life I'd been making $10 a day, and at one point I'd been making $1 million a year. And at one point I thought that this was too little, and at one point I thought this was too much, but it was actually reversed as to when I felt that. When I was making $1 million, it didn't feel like enough. And when I was living off $10 a day, I felt like it was too much because I thought maybe I could do it off 8, maybe I could do it off 7. So you see, it's not just the quantity on the plus side, you know, and getting more that we can find our identity in. For me, and I think for a lot of us, it's actually our identity in any quantity. So some of you guys, I my story is a little bit extreme on the REI side, but a lot of us, we deal with a similar thing, where if you've ever stolen anything, which I used to steal a ton when I was a kid, if you've ever stolen anything, or if you've ever, you know, been kind of a slave to where things are free. This thing just go off? Is it on? Is it on? Okay. If you've ever been a slave to, if something's free, you feel like you can't turn it down. I'm gonna get some water. Is this on? Is that me? Okay. If you've ever felt like you can't turn something down just because it's free, then you know what it's like to be a slave on the quantity on the low side. So what I'm going to propose here for us to think about is we have to come up with a new definition of freedom. Check. Hello? Should I use this thing? I can use this. Hello? I don't know what to do here. Design. Hello, hello.
A bit? Hello?
Cool. Sorry about that. Okay, we're back. So what I'm proposing, you guys, is that we have to come up with a definition of freedom that exists outside of quantities. Because the research I've done, living on these extreme versions of my life, I really hope that you don't have to do. But I don't think it can be a waste either. I don't think it has to be a waste for you. So what I don't want you to say is, oh, hey, I worked at Procter & Gamble, or I'm going to school right now, or I don't want to start up anyways, or I'm much more modest, I only want to make $60,000. Don't exclude yourself from this conversation by saying that you're different from me or the other people around you, because we all have these two sides of us inside of us. And what I believe is that to really have freedom, we need to find our identity outside of any quantity, high or low. And what that means is that our value, the way we see ourselves, or the way we see our performance, also can't be tied to this quantity. And this is what's really cool, because if we don't do this, let me tell you that the other way of doing it is a real problem. Like I said, I would sit in a room and judge people like you. And we all do that. We all pick some random number. And I would challenge you guys to do this right now. We all pick some random number and we say, this is the line. Jeans, $80. I would never spend $80 on a pair of jeans. Anyone who spends more than $80 on a pair of jeans is crazy. Or purses, $40. Or 7 pairs of shoes. Or 1 house. Or 2 cars. Or working 40 hours. Or making $1 million. We all pick this number in various places in our life. And we say, hey, anyone on that side is bad. And anyone on this side, the side I happen to be on, is good. That's how we look at it. And that's not gospel. That's finding our identity in a number. If we're able to do this, you guys, if we're able to find our identity outside of quantity, we can do something very special. Because I'm convinced, having spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of money and wasted a lot of time, that for those of you that are following Jesus, there is no better use of a dollar than to worship God. No better use. So if you think that you're going to start worshiping God once you make $1 million, once you make $10,000, or once you finish college, or once you get a promotion, once you get married, or once you have 2 kids, or once you buy a house, I think we're missing the point. And for me, that's what I was always doing. I thought, oh, once I become a missionary, once I make less than this amount, because I certainly can't worship God while I'm middle class, that's how it felt. And I actually felt like that on the other side, too. Once I was making $100,000, I felt, oh, man, I really need, for the goals that God wants me to accomplish, I need $200,000. That's how it felt. And what that did was it constantly prevented me from being able to worship and serve God in the moment. And being able to spend a dollar to worship God is something that you guys can do today, regardless of wherever you're at, regardless of whatever your history is, regardless of what your education is, and regardless of what you've done. And I had to learn this the hard way. I had to learn this by getting kicked out of REI. And I really hope you guys don't have to do that to learn from some of the lessons that I've learned. So this question comes up. What if I don't have many dollars? What if, I mean, some of you guys might, a lot of you might even be in debt if the statistics have anything to say about it. Can I worship God less? Well, I have good news for you guys. It turns out you might be God's favorite type of person to deal with. Because there's some stories in the Bible, and God seems to get really excited, not about how many votes or how many dollars we spend, but in how well we spend the ones that we're given. And there's a few stories about how he used people that were completely unqualified and undeserving. Abraham, who was a moon worshiper at the time. The woman who gave the 2 coins at the temple. And Jesus looked at her and said, anytime you hear the gospel, you're going to hear about this woman. And even Jesus, who didn't have much anything on this earth. So what I'm going to challenge you guys with is we have to be able to identify the areas that we're pursuing quantity over worship. And for me, I don't differentiate between high quantities or low quantities. I think, the unfortunate nature of the Christian culture that I come from was being a cheapskate and being efficient was one of the ways that we serve God. And I'm not saying efficiency is bad, but efficiency is a terrible goal. It makes a great tool, but it's a terrible goal. And without realizing it, you know something's your goal when you can't turn it off. For me, a lot of these drivers, these things that got me up in the morning, that the reason why I worked, the reason why I stole, was because I couldn't turn it off. I lived for these things. One thing, with debt, I just want to say something quick about this. That's not the point of this conversation, but everyone's wondering, my constant feeling with the Lord is, what do I have to offer? And sometimes I don't feel like I have enough to offer, so I'm going to go and try and get more to make me feel more important. And feeling more important, when I make more, it made me feel more important with my parents because, when I was a kid, getting good grades made me feel like I was able to get their approval more, even though I don't think that's true. And getting more as an adult, that scale doesn't really change. It just kind of shifts a little bit. And the types of things I found myself bragging about as stories telling around my family or my dad were, hey, I got this much more money now, or I got this promotion. And without really realizing it, that's what I thought about our Heavenly Father too. And I realized that way of seeing God is not a correct way because he's never going to ask me for more than he's given me. But this is an important distinction that I want to make too. He will ask you for every single thing that he's given you. So he won't ask you for one penny more than that, but he won't ask you for one penny less either. Tim Keller, who's a bit of a hero of mine, he says this really funny thing that struck me at first. It really threw me off. He said, God and idols are pretty similar. They're both going to take everything from you. The only difference is God asks you up front. He tells you up front that that's what he's going to do. He says, I'm going to kill you. that's what being a Christian is. You're going to die to yourself. I'm going to give you a new life. You're going to die to the way that you live. You're going to live for me, but it's going to cost you everything. And in a way, that wasn't enough for me. I felt like I needed to give more. I felt like I needed to make more and be more. Either on the less side, less is more, or the more side, more is more. And it was never enough. So I said that I'm going to talk about the gospel. And this is important because there's a lot of takeaways you guys could walk away with tonight. You could walk away thinking, oh, what he really said was I should go play blackjack. It's not what I'm saying. Or I should return more stuff to REI or stop returning now. This is not that kind of talk. There's a saying about the gospel that the difference between news and advice is that anytime you get advice, you always walk away feeling more heavy. I could give you guys 3 or 4 or 5 tips or tricks of what to do tonight to be more responsible with money. But the problem with that is you're going to leave being like, okay, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to nail this tomorrow. I'm convicted. I'm inspired. I'm going to go live these things out. And then you're going to fail. Because that's what happens. And then you're going to feel like crap. But news has a different ability. It actually has the ability to change us from the inside out. And one of the things I've realized about money and generosity is you can only be generous if you believe that you've been given generosity. So as I look at my life and I looked at all the ways I was living, the ways I was scrapping for less, the ways I was scrapping for more, is I realized that I had a wrong viewpoint of who my dad was, who my Heavenly Father was. You guys, he's a good dad. And if we come to believe in his generosity, his limitless love, I think it actually changes. I got a story about this. Last year, my daughter turned 13, and we went to New York to celebrate. We'd never been there. And we went to go see the musical Les Miserables, which is one of our family's favorite stories. And I had heard that you show up to the ticket counter last minute and you can get these cheaper tickets. Not true. At Les Mis, at least, on this particular day, it wasn't true. I show up, and my daughter's sitting there. She's 13. Her name's Dove. And the lady says, would you like the $100 tickets or the $140 tickets? And I'm like, I didn't know it was going to be that much. I mean, maybe you guys go to Broadway plays all the time, and you know that that's just how much it costs. I didn't know that. Remember, I was thinking about how many orphans this can feed. So I'm sitting there, and my first instinct was to look at her and be like, which one do you want? Which something aside told me that that'd be a terrible idea. So I said, I'll take two of the $140 tickets. So I pay for them. We're walking to our seats, and so my daughter, who's like me, she goes, Dad, is that worth it? That's a good question. So I said, we'll talk about it afterwards. So we sit through the musical. We're crying. It's amazing. Grace, music. It was funny. And afterwards, we go out to pizza. And I said, Dove, I have an answer for you. And the answer is, yes, it was worth it. Do you know how I know this? Because it's my money, and I get to decide. And I say that you're worth it. And what I was doing, you guys, is I was telling her the thing that I then realized I wish that I had known. Because I didn't understand the cost of Jesus' death, I didn't understand that I was worth it to God, I spent my entire life trying to prove that I could earn my way through spending more or spending less. But I could not accept a fancy gift. You know, I mean, someone would give me something, I'd be like, that's ridiculous, that's way too much. And who are we to say that? You know, that's completely insulting. And besides that fact, it's just not true at all. If the Bible is real, and if the Bible says that Jesus died for us, and if we believe he is God, that means you are worth the price of God's Son, which means there's nothing worth more than you. There's no amount of money that's worth more than you. So just that viewpoint, it allowed me a lot of freedom with how I saw money. And you guys, this is, I hope we don't walk away thinking that you need to make more, give more, force generosity, force service. And really what this is an opportunity. If we believe these things, I think that what we're given is an opportunity to partner with who God is and what God's doing. In a way, the thing that I could never see that money was, I thought money was a way of keeping score. And I thought you got points if you, at one point, got, you know, it's like golf where you want to get the lowest score, and the one point where it's like bowling and you want to get the highest score. But I couldn't see that money, it's a vote. It's an opportunity to worship. It's an opportunity to partner with God and what he's doing. And there's two cool things. This is one way I know that I have more freedom now than ever. I don't know. The sound wasn't very good on the Monty Python skit, but the skit, it's really funny. What happens is the guy shows up and he's like, how much is this? And the guy goes, 20 shekels. He goes, okay, here's 20. He goes, you can't do that. You have to haggle for it. And the guy's like, what do you mean haggle? He's like, well, you have to offer me 10. And the guy's like, well, I'm willing to give you 20. He's like, no, that's not how it works. And finally, he gives it to him for 17. But it's, what I realized was when I haggled, when I bartered, I only did it one way. And now I have this trick that I call reverse negotiation. And it goes like this. You offer to sell the same thing for 10, and I counteroffer and I say, I'm going to give you 11. Because I don't let people decide how much I get to partner or worship with God and what he's doing. So this worked for us. There was a lady that was writing these blog posts, and she was really helping my wife out and speaking truth. And guess what the price of these blog posts was? Free. I said, you know what? We're going to pay for that. Because there's two reasons why we pay for something like that when we don't have to. One is you're guaranteeing there's going to be more of it in the world. You're kind of supporting it. You're voting for it. Just like you would vote for a president. The second thing is, and this is what's cool, when you partner with it, you actually get credit for it. You're like on that team. And what God's saying is when you partner with me, when you give money to me, when you give a dollar to me, when you spend your money this way, which you can't do when you're using it to keep track of score, you're on my team. But here's the ultimate kicker, you guys, is you don't have to do anything to get that. You don't even have to spend a dollar. This is what becomes so amazing about the language that he uses about what it means to be a son of God or an heir of the throne. He's saying, you get the credit no matter what. And this is what I found is the only thing strong enough to break my cheapskateness, to break my extravagance upon myself, and my unlimited desire to buy comfort. And I've lived on both sides of the spectrum, as I kind of shared. I have a bit ridiculous of a story, and I didn't find satisfaction in either. When I was living off $10 a day, I mean, the biking part was fun, but the lifestyle for me, I always looked at other people, and I spent my entire life judging people that were making more and thinking that I wasn't enough compared to the people that were making less. And when I was making $1 million a year, I was always looking at people that were making more, and I wanted to be like them. And there's a lot of them, you guys. Once you get up there, wherever your number is, I mean, think about how much you're making now compared to what you thought you would be making when you were 10. Like, you know, we've all made it. It's not enough. It never will be. So this other mindset, you guys, of seeing money as an opportunity for worship has really freed me. And I'm so happy to be able to share this story with you guys, because I think it applies to anyone wherever you're at. And I hope my examples weren't too ridiculous. I hope you can find your spot on there. And I believe we each have those sides in our own life. So we're going to be splitting off in these groups. And am I supposed to just introduce these questions now? Cool. So the questions that I would love for you guys to answer, there's three of them. Okay. And this is, I always just push for honesty over, you don't even need to share it, but I want you to at least think about it. But, you know, your group leaders are prepared to walk you through these. The first one is I want to know one area where it's easy for you to spend too much, or it's easy for you to spend. In other words, you spend too much in this area. Okay, it might not be fashion, it might be books, it might be, entertainment. And then I want to know, where are you a cheapskate? What's one area where it's hard for you to spend, where it's hard to let go of money, where you're keeping track on kind of the low side? You identify as being, you know, one of the small guys. So an area that you spend too much, an area that you think you spend too little, where it's hard. And the final thing is, I want to know one amount, and you're not telling me this is for you and this is for your group, but I want you to think about one amount that you find your identity in. Okay? When I was in kindergarten, I heard of Donald Trump. He was a millionaire. That number got stuck in my head. And I thought, once I make $1 million, I'll be happy. You know, it could be $100. I will never buy a $100 pair of jeans. Or maybe it's zero. Maybe it's like, I will never go into debt. That's who I am. So I want you to share one number that you find your identity in. That's it. Thanks, guys.